the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. You know, there are new studies and surveys out about consumer finances and about retirement. One of the troubling trends that is highlighted in these studies is that of an individual's ability to retire, having enough money to do so. And the conclusion is that Americans aren't saving enough. And what they risk right now is that of outliving their assets when they retire. There is a crisis building in the retirement market as Social Security benefits and inadequate amounts of assets are saved. So let's dive into the details and see that what that means for our listeners.
The number of reports you're referring to, John, come from the Fed's 2016 survey of consumer finances and the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. As more and more of us age, as the population gets older in this country, you're seeing on college campuses now a number of departments open up on the study of retirement planning. It's becoming a big issue given the fact that you have 10,000 of us boomers retiring almost every single day well into the next century. So one of the things that they wanted to look at in this survey is next to Social Security, 401ks, and IRAs make up the second most important leg of an individual's retirement plan. The unfortunate thing is there's not a lot of good news regarding either of them.
Well, one of the things we've covered a lot on this program and on Financial Sense is that Social Security and other government entitlements are at risk. The less and less government's ability to pay increases, sooner or later there's going to have to be this reneging of the ability to pay Social Security and other benefits. So what does that mean now in terms of this report?
Well, one of the things they talk about, Social Security is replacing less earnings for a number of reasons. Number one is they moved the retirement date. It used to be you could get 75% of your benefits at age 62. You'd get full benefits at age 65. Well, that has been moved out by 2 years to age 67. So as a result, you're going to get less benefits, especially for those that opt to take their benefits at age 62, which in this case, you would only get 70% of your benefits. So you'd be giving up 30% of those potential benefits or 25, depending on when you were born. The second thing that is happening, and we're seeing this especially over the last 3 or 4 years, is Medicare premiums are rising faster than inflation. And if you're on Medicare and receiving Social Security, as you're well aware, the government subtracts your Medicare premium from your Social Security check. So if you, let's say you're getting $1,000 a month, your Medicare premiums are a couple hundred dollars. The $200 comes off the top, and then, of course, you get the rest. So Medicare premiums are rising faster than Social Security benefits. And number three, more Social Security will be subject to taxation. And one of the reasons is the figures that they put in terms of when your Social Security is taxable. There's two brackets. 50% is subject to income tax and 85%. The unfortunate thing is the bracket or the figures themselves, whether you're single or married, have not been indexed for inflation. So just take a look at the last couple of decades, even though inflation has been low, nonetheless, it's putting more and more recipients into a higher tax bracket where their Social Security becomes taxable. So three things. You have to wait later to get your full benefit. Number two, Medicare is rising faster, so that subtracts from your benefit. And number three, more and more individuals are going to be paying income tax on the Social Security they receive.
Yeah, and also what we have seen is the concept that, and we saw this from the presidential campaign, some of the debates, a future Congress might reduce benefits in order to try to get control of the burgeoning government deficit in order to avoid debt, and that could be as early as the coming decade.
That could be because according to the CBO, we'll be at $25 trillion. And as we've discussed on the weekend program, one of the problems that the GOP is having with this tax cut, wanting to lower corporate taxes and also give tax cuts to individual taxpayers is they're dealing with deficits. And we're dealing with over $20.5 trillion worth of debt, which sort of cuts back on your maneuverability in terms of the things that you were able to offer. So if you take a look at when George Bush cut taxes or George W. Bush cut taxes in 2001 and 2003, the deficit or the national debt at that time was $5 trillion. Of course, Bush went on to double that to 10, and Obama doubled that to 20. And here we are under Trump. We're at $20.5 trillion. That's a lot of money.
Now that we've stipulated that Social Security will probably cover less and less of income. Now, what did the report say regarding IRAs and 401ks, which constitute the bulk of people's retirement income?
You know, the report doesn't have a lot of good things to say. Number one, with Social Security replacing a smaller percentage of pre-retirement earnings, plans have taken on a greater importance. And John, you and I remember with our parents, where they had defined benefit pension plans. A lot of people that work for state and federal government still do. But even there, the risk of defined benefit plans being replaced at the government level, because that's another crisis, is the pension funding at the state level. A lot of states have gotten themselves into deep trouble because they have underfunded pension plans. My own state of California, we have had numerous cities that have defaulted on their municipal bonds because they weren't able to meet their interest payments because of pension requirements. And that is growing, and even it will be growing at the federal level. So just as you have seen defined benefit pension plans go the way of the dodo bird, you may see it also at the federal and state level, because several governors are having to tackle this issue because it is going to be a big one in the next decade. But with Social Security covering a smaller percentage, the main source of retirement income or supplemental income to Social Security has been 401k plans in IRAs. And if you take a look at these two categories of pensions, whether it's IRAs or it's 401ks, there's $8.2 trillion at the end of 2016 in IRAs, and there's $5.8 trillion in 401ks. Now, one of the reasons that IRAs are larger than 401ks, a lot of people thought it would be just the opposite, is in today's work environment, a lot of individuals change jobs. You may be with one company for 5-10 years, and then let's say you move on in your career, you get laid off, you get another job. What happens is a lot of individuals will then roll their 401k plan into an IRA. And then, of course, ultimately, that's what you do when you retire from the company, as you gain control of those assets for the main support supplementing your Social Security. So job changes and rollovers are one reason there's so much more money in IRAs.
You know, it's an amazing, though, because even with diminishing Social Security returns, even so, Congress was looking at reducing those as a means of getting more revenue.
It was still brought up, and most of that, John, ended with a presidential tweet. But what it was, and what's important about this, it's a trial balloon, because our politicians need more and more sources of income. When you're dealing with almost $21 trillion of debt, rising interest rates on that government debt, they're looking, they want to do things that kind of rework the economy and stimulate the economy. But I think their maneuverability is limited. And it's one thing that has been brought up. Barack Obama wanted to place a cap on the amount that you could have in a pension plan to $3 million. That was brought up by him. It was brought up by several candidates during the presidential election in 2016. So it's a trial balloon, and we have seen it brought up now by a president and presidential candidates. And we've also seen it brought up by both houses of Congress. So it's something that they are looking at. And I would not be surprised if sometime and maybe the next decade early on, despite the problems with Social Security, that they place a limitation on the deductibility of what you can put away in a retirement program.
Anything else in the report that you would think is significant other than these programs have supplanted as a source of income in retirement defined benefit plans?
You know what the survey found, which I found myself surprising, is employee contribution rates have fallen, and mainly due to auto enrollment, which increases participation. But on the other hand, it depresses the volume of contributions.
Okay, now explain that.
Well, let's take somebody in the private sector. You get a job, you join the company. If there's an auto enrollment, the HR department automatically enrolls you in their 401k program. Now, it may be at a very, very lower rate. You may just be putting in the minimum. You could put in 10, 20 bucks a month, you know, because it's up to you. An employer can't, they can enroll you, but they can't force you to put in a certain amount. So the nice thing about auto enrollment, at least a lot of people are participating. However, a lot of people are participating that really can't afford it, or they really don't want it. They don't need money. It may be an individual that just got out of college, is saddled with student loans. It could be a new married couple or saddled with student loans. They're trying to save up for a house, or maybe they have kids. So that has brought down the level of contribution, while at the same time, as a result of auto enrollment, it has increased the number of individuals that are participating. Because here's the facts. If you take a look at what you're able to contribute, you can contribute $18,000, and that's due to go up next year. And if you're over age 50, you can add another 6,000, so that could be 24,000. And depending on how you structure your 401k plan, especially for small businesses, you can contribute up to 53,000. So when you take a look at the number of individuals who are actually maximizing their 401k, according to the study, John, only 10% of the individuals contributing to 401k plans are actually maximizing the amount of money that they can put away for retirement. And I think a lot of this has to do as well as large plans. Like if you work for a big company, you work for Google, you work for Apple or somebody like that. Most of the larger companies have more efficient plans. They have lower expenses. They also have greater diversification versus some of the small plans, which can get saddled with high commission cost and high fees. So it's amazing what they found is when you take a look at the number of individuals that were participating by age, and as one would expect, the lower the age, let's say those that are younger, were participating less than individuals that were an older age. So, for example, the amounts were larger, which you would expect for somebody older. If you've been putting money into a plan over a longer period of time, you would expect to have more money as you get older. And likewise, with younger individuals, what's surprising is a lot of millennials are not participating in these plans. And it could be that there's other priorities. You know, it's hard to think about retirement when you're 25, when you're talking about something that's 40 years out. And then also a lot of millennials come out of college and they're saddled with huge amounts of debt. You throw in auto loans and you take a look at how many of them can qualify for a home. A lot of them aren't even buying homes. So it's a different kind of lifestyle that is contributing to these numbers. But you'll see later on the real key to retirement security is retiring early.
If we take a look at the survey, I'm just curious right now what the average balances are out there, because if we're doing away, well, obviously defined benefit pension plans and Social Security is going to diminish, then reliance is going to be more and more on these plans. So how do the balances stack up in terms of preparedness?
You know, it doesn't look good. I mean, obviously somebody at a younger age has fewer years to contribute. So, you know, they're going to have less in their account balance versus somebody that's in their 50s or 60s. And there's a big gulf. I mean, the average 35, 44 year old had $37,000 in their 401k IRAs in 2016 compared to 40,000 in 2013. So in that age group, the amount of the balances have gone out. A lot of that had to do with, you know, what's going on in the economy. A lot of people just are opting not to contribute. If you look at the 45 to, let's say, 54 age group, not much of a change there. From 2013 to 2016, that balance has gone from 77,000 to 80, which is really not that much when you consider the market during that period of time is up almost 200%. And quite honestly, not much on the change from the 55 to 64 age group. It went from 100,000 to 104,000. So despite the fact that you've seen this big increase in stock market returns, remember, it really hasn't translated to larger 401k or IRA account balances.
This does not sound like a lot of money, especially if you look at the low interest rate environment in which we have found ourselves for the last decade.
No, and that's where the real problem is. According to the study, and this is just a general rule, if your goal is to reach about 75% of your salary during your working career, to have that amount of income during retirement, you would need approximately 8.5 times your annual income at age 60. So let's say if you're making $50,000, you would need $400,000 or that minimum to replace 75% of your earning income during your working career with your Social Security combined. So if you take a look at the average balance in this country right now, which is about $135,000, assuming you could buy yourself an annuity, husband and wife, age 65. John, that would give you about $600 a month for the rest of your life. The only problem is that never goes up. So it's just like a fixed pension. You get $600 today. 10 years from now, it's still $600. 20 years from now, it's still $600. And that's assuming you put it in an annuity. If you were to take that $135,000 and put it in, let's say, a bond fund today at 3%, you would get actually much less than that, probably a couple thousand less. So when you put your money in an annuity, in essence, you're creating yourself a small pension plan that guarantees you can't outlive that amount no matter how long you live. The problem is a lot of individuals don't do that. They try to invest it, and the investment returns on fixed income investments, things like treasuries, CDs, things like that, have not been very good. In fact, overseas, it's not much better. In fact, almost a third of all bonds or sovereign bonds in the world offer negative interest rates. In other words, you pay the government to buy their bonds, which most people don't do. And the only way you're going to get something halfway decent that would produce an equivalent amount of income to what you get in an annuity would have to be to go in a junk bond, or let's say an emerging market bond, which is higher risk. So in order to achieve the same benefit, John, you have to take a lot more risk today, which a lot of people just aren't willing to do.
Now, in the survey, there is a difference between amounts, given the fact that older people have longer to contribute. But now let's rephrase this. What about disparities in income brackets? How does that stack up?
Well, just as you would expect, the more income you make, the higher probability that you have more in your 401k program. What they did is they took the income brackets and they broke them into five brackets. Those with the highest income, those with the lowest income. If you take a look at the highest quintile, the average balance was in 2013, it was $452,000. That grew to $780,000 in 2016. So the higher income brackets are doing better investment-wise and also doing better contribution-wise. If you take the second highest bracket, they had a balance of $132,000 in 2013, $335,000 in 2016. If you take a look at the third quintile, that's a group that only went from 100 to 104. The second quintile went from 50, about roughly 54 to 72,000. And the lowest quintile doubled from 13 to almost 27,000. So big, big, major difference in wealth gap with the top two quintiles in terms of how much money is put away for retirement. The average overall, there was 111,000 on balance in 2013, and that figure has risen to 135,000 in 2016. So if you look at 4 years of a bull market, you take a look at the increase, it was only roughly about 22%, where during that period of time, the stock market has gone up nearly 200%. So even though investors are doing better in the top quintile, they're not keeping up with market returns. and they're going to need a lot more. Usually people in that income bracket are going to have to replace a lot more of their income. Obviously, if you make $100,000 a year, replacing 75% of that is going to take a lot more assets than somebody making, let's say, $50,000 or $40,000 a year, where Social Security plays a greater and greater role in terms of making up that difference or supplanting your income.
Overall, if we look at the whole population now, what percentage are contributing to their 401ks and trying to save towards this retirement?
John, it's surprisingly only about 50%. Now, the participation has gone up in those 4 years while the contributions are going down. Once again, that's because of these automatic enrollment programs where you go work for a company and you're automatically enrolled, but you put in the minimum. I mean, you can put in as little as $25 a month. So the other thing, too, that they found in the survey is the disparity in 401k and IRA plans due to leakage, due to high fees, which can reduce returns.
Well, I know you work with small businesses, Jim, in regards to 401k plans. Now, how do you structure things and maybe compare that to how some of the big corporations do it?
Well, obviously, the big corporations have the muscle and they can pick great programs. But, you know, the nice thing about us with being at the institutional level is we act as fiduciaries. So we act in the client's best interest. So we're able to get, for example, most individuals aren't even aware of this, including many business owners. You take a popular mutual fund. It could be with anybody. It could be with Vanguard. It could be with Fidelity. It could be with American Funds, whoever you're looking at out there. They have different class structures. And at the institutional level, you can get a institutional class where the fees that are charged because it's institutional are much lower. And John, that makes a difference. And so what we're able to do is we can customize a plan, for example, on a number of things. Everybody likes different things in a 401k program. What we recommend is you have a broad diversification of asset classes. So you just don't, you know, a lot of the smaller plans, you have a large cap, small cap, bond fund, money market fund, very few choices. What you really want is to cover every asset class and even have sector classifications in there, because there's times like in 1998, 1999, and 2000 where the one dominant sector in the market was technology, just as technology has been the dominant sector in the market this year and in the market the last couple of years. So you want broad asset classification. You want a commodity fund in there where you can put money in gold, oil, or something like that, because there's times towards the end of a business cycle where commodities outperform. And then also, you have to have a proper asset allocation mix, obviously, and that's going to be based on your risk profile, which is what we use when we set up 401k plans. We have the employees go through a risk profile so that they're properly allocated given their age and their risk tolerance. Obviously, if you're 25 years old, you're going to be able to take a lot greater risk than somebody that's 55 or 60 years old. And quite honestly, if you're 25, you should be almost fully invested in equities, because who cares if you go through a bear market? Because if you do, every time you put money in that, taken out of your paycheck into the funds that you're in, you're buying more shares at a lower price. And really, all you care about 40 years from now, if you're 25, is how many shares you own or how big your plan is. So there's a big difference. You know, the other thing that we're having to do now, because 401ks and IRAs have become such a large and important stool in retirement. I mean, next to Social Security, is we are managing 401k plans for our larger clients, because those assets represent a larger and larger portion of their overall assets when it comes to retirement planning.
Given all the facts, Jim, that we have analyzed here, diminishing benefits in certain areas, people failing to save, what do you think all of this says about the future here?
It's not bright, and it's really a matter of education. And companies really should, with their HR department, if they're large enough, really inform the incoming employee, especially if they're younger, the importance in studies. And I'm going to give you an example here of starting early. I don't care if you're starting out $20, $50 a month or even $100 a month. There's a reason why you want to start early, because let's take a look at you are missing out on hundreds of thousands of dollars of potential money by not contributing. And you're going to miss out on this for a number of reasons. Number one, you get a tax deduction. If you put $100 into your 401k, that $100 is subtracted off your gross income. So number one, there's a tax deduction. Number two, many plans, and in fact, the majority of them have matching contributions from the employer. So you put in $100, your employer matches you with $100. You just doubled your contribution in your rate of return the moment you do that. And number three, all that money, while it's in the 401k plan, is going to grow tax deferred. And imagine the kind of money that that grows to over a 10, 20, 30, 40 year period of time. And I want to illustrate this. If you're young, in your 20s, let's say you could put $200 a month into a 401k plan. So that's $2,400 a year. It's $50 a week. And let's say your employer matches you 100%. A lot of the companies will match up to 6% of your income. So that's $400 because you put in $200, your employer puts $200. But it's actually more than that because that $200 actually saves you 25% in taxes between federal and state. So let's round that off with the tax savings. That's $450 a month. You do this every single month starting at age 25. At age 65, you're going to have $1.6 million. If you do this at age 35, you're going to have $675,000. At age 45, only $266,000. And at age 55, only $83,000. So you can see why one of the most important things that you can do when you start out your working career, especially with the way we're going with Social Security and other expenses of government, you are going to have to be dependent more and more on your own retirement. And the best way to do that is start out early. It doesn't take a lot. And if even better, if you can increase that amount as your salary, as you grow your career, contribute. So eventually, by the time you reach age 50, you're putting in the maximum amount, which is only about 10% of the population right now.
What's really important, I think, that these figures indicate is the importance of starting early to plan for this retirement. A lot of young people don't think about that. They think, oh, well, I got X number of decades ahead of me, and therefore I don't have to. Or this attitude more and more that government is going to provide what we need. But the figures here are warring against that.
Once again, the key to success, be disciplined, start early, invest appropriately.
A reminder for the program for tomorrow. Our guest on the show is Betsy Brill, Strategic Philanthropy, Getting the Most Out of Your Charitable Contributions. That's tomorrow right here on Lifetime Income. And time right now for our real life case study, which of course is always is a hypothetical illustration based on real life examples. Names and circumstances have been changed. And also we do have slides online at financialsense.com, which illustrate the points being made.
And this week, we're going to talk about Kurt and Katie Catastrophe. Kurt is age 58. Katie is about 59, actually 1 year difference. They both hope to retire in 5 or 6 years. Given their life expectancy from their health questionnaire, Kurt's life expectancy is age 90, Katie 92. Moderately conservative, they want growth because their greatest fear is they don't have enough money, which is indeed the case. Kurt, to just give you a color background on this couple, Kurt has spent the latter part of his career working for a local small company. He's enjoyed working in a small, friendly owned firm that pays great benefits, but he feels that he's far behind the curve with regards to retirement preparedness. Even with a great income, Kurt hasn't saved much for retirement and is concerned that he and his wife won't have enough assets to live throughout their retirement years. Kurt and his wife have a very nice lifestyle and are paying for 3 children to attend prestigious universities out of state. Kurt is concerned that they may be unable to maintain their lifestyle throughout their retirement years, especially given their longevity. Katie, on the other hand, works as a secretary at a mid-sized consulting firm for the past 15 years. She's gone to work as the kids got older. She hasn't enjoyed her job, but she has remained there because it helps support the lifestyle that she and her husband have enjoyed living. She's not much of a saver and rather enjoys spoiling her kids and taking family vacations when they can. Katie plans to save aggressively for the next few years and thinks that they will be able to at least help and her husband live throughout their retirement. The family is probably the most important thing to her, and that's reflected in their lifestyle and the things they do with their children and their grandchildren. On a risk scale, they're fairly conservative, about 4 on a scale of 1 to 10. Their portfolio was 6, and a lot of that is sort of like, hey, we need to make this up. They got hit pretty hard in the downturn in 2007 and 2008, and they realize when they came to us, they weren't doing what they should be doing. And what they were concerned about was, given that they want to retire in 5 or 6 years, what kind of assets they would have to live on, given that their lifestyle. They wanted to leave a legacy, leaving something to their children's important. But more importantly, they want to maintain their lifestyle, and they're worried about what happens if they run out of assets. If we take a look at their budget, it's roughly $143,000 a year, $80,000 for essentials, $63,000. A lot of that is vacation, and even though it's kind of discretionary, it's their children's education. Kurt's salary is $111,000. Katie's $55,000. They had a surplus of $23,000. And that's an important figure, as we try to point out. That $23,000 surplus needs to increase, and you need to put more than the $23,000 away to hit your retirement goals. Just as the example I gave you of, as you wait later and later on in life to contribute to a 401k program, there's going to be less and less money there. And that's the thing that Kurt and Katie are facing. If you look at their retirement budget, it was $58,000, $62,000 for discretionary, $120,000. You know, just like the example, to replace that, they would almost need $100,000 a year coming in from Social Security and assets. Unfortunately, Social Security is only going to provide them $48,000, leaving a shortfall of $72,000. We take a look at their assets. They had a home that's worth about $500,000 with a $300,000 mortgage against it. Kurt's retirement had $500,000, and Katie's had $235,000, and they had cash. Mainly, that was the sale of a property that they had. It was kind of investment rental. It had negative cash flow, but the property had appreciated, and the cash flow was eating into their monthly budget. So that's where that money came from. Their net worth was roughly $1 million. And the things that they wanted to deal with, and this was really important, maximizing their retirement savings, mitigating the expectations. And that's really a big one, because there's sort of a reality check. You got to tell somebody, hey, you may want to retire in 5 or 6 years, but that's really not going to be possible. And one thing that we did is we reduced their allocation to stocks, especially as this market has gone up, where basically they're only about 70, 80% invested. So we reduced that risk a little bit, because as I told them, sooner or later, we're going to have a bear market. And one thing you absolutely cannot afford is a major drawdown of your assets when you're only 5 or 6 years away from retirement. So if we take a look at what we did, we recommended for their plan that they focus on making up the shortfall in three ways. Number one, they were going to have to delay retirement in order to save more. We told them the numbers just don't add up to retire in 5 or 6 years. I mean, that's the reality. Number two, decreasing expenses by focusing on reducing the discretionary spending. That's a big one. Even though they had a surplus of $23,000, they were going to actually have to increase that amount because, you know, their goal was to retire in 5, 6 years. We said that's really not going to be possible. The other thing that we said to consider is downsizing the home and consider the idea of relocating at retirement to an area where it's cheaper to live. There's less taxes or no taxes, and that's something that they are now considering in their retirement plans. We also advise Kurt and Katie decrease their expenses by at least $500 a month and put that money into their 401k plans. We also encourage them to delay taking Social Security till ages 68 to 70, because it goes, if you defer it, it goes by 8% a year, and that would make up a difference, because if they were to defer it to age 70 for both of them, we could increase their Social Security benefits closer to $60,000, and that would help get them to part of their goals. We also suggested downsizing the home to reduce the cost because they had a mortgage on it. And for them, this would mean relocating to an area with a lower cost of living versus the neighborhood they're in. So, I mean, these were some pretty hard lifestyle choices that we had to face up to. And we also told them they wanted to leave a legacy, but the most important thing for them, given what they want to do and given their life expectancy, was to make sure that they delay retirement and build up as much assets as they could so they could enjoy a retirement lifestyle throughout their entire lifetime.
And a reminder again that coming up tomorrow, Betsy Brill is the guest, Strategic Philanthropy, getting the most out of your charitable contributions. Well, Jim, we're going to be rounding out the year here, believe it or not. We're coming up very quickly on December. So what are we looking forward to in the next few weeks?
Well, it's going to be interesting, John, another version coming out of the Senate, which is actually a better bill, although one senator basically already came out on the Thursday, the day we're doing this program, and said he was against it. So they don't have much of a margin. The Republicans only have a 2-seat margin in the Senate, so they cannot afford to lose more than 2 votes because the vice president could always vote on that. But this tax bill, if it goes through, is going to impact people in so many ways. And if we finally get there, if it passes the Senate, we'll look at that. And then also if it passes the House, we'll be talking about it because these bills keep changing as we get along.
And Jim, it's sort of interesting because we've had all of this talk about tax reform, but the GOP seems to be discovering, and we knew this was coming, right? The debt doubled during the Obama administration, that with $20 trillion plus in debt, it's really hard to find anything you can possibly cut in terms of revenue or scratch up additional sources of money. And this is going to be an ongoing thing now.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, it's amazing. The last two presidents, Bush doubled the national debt from 5 to 10 trillion. Obama doubled it from 10 to 20. And so just in 2 presidencies in 16 years, we've gone from 5 trillion to over 20 trillion, or quadrupled the debt. And now I think a lot of our politicians are finding this puts limitations. And unfortunately, you got 2 parties. One wants to reduce taxes, and I think the Republicans are having a hard time doing that because where are you going to get the money? You want to lower corporate taxes? Okay, where are you going to find the money to do that? That means less for individual taxes. And that's why this is really turning out to be a difficult bill. On the other hand, I mean, whatever they're doing, it's in many ways, it could be a tax increase depending, as we've covered on the weekend shows, depending where you live and what kind of house you have and your lifestyle. So it's very, very important in terms of, this is one of those bills, John, where you can't say broadly, this is how it affects everybody. It's going to affect everybody different. If you live in California, New York, New Jersey, it's going to be different than if you live in Texas, Florida, or Nevada. So big, big changes come down the road. And when they happen, we'll be here to talk about it. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.